Jeff waved Sam and Matt out of the bunkhouse early the next morning.
Lightning didn't come home last night. Leah loves that damn horse more than she does me, I think. She and Lisa are having horses saddled up now to go searching. You two go with them. How was your supper last night?
Excellent. Once we got out on the porch.
The brothers were sitting their saddles when the girls came out. They knew then what those split skirts were for, riding astride.
Lord have mercy.
It didn't bother Sam at all. Indian women always rode astride, but his mother never did. She always rode on a side saddle.
We don't need nursemaids.
Your daddy told us to come along, so we're coming along.
Well, you better tell the cook to fix you something to eat in case we have to noon. We only brought enough for the two of us.
We did.
Well, aren't you the smart one? Let's ride.
The girls swung into their saddles and were gone in a cloud of dust.
We'll just poke along behind. Their horses can't take much of that. They're just showing off for our benefit.
The brothers fell in behind the girls, riding at an easy canter, keeping them in sight, but staying far back until the girls stopped their showing off and gave their horses a chance to blow. It didn't take long. The girls reined up at the crest of a long, swelling hill. The day was one of those Texas days. The sky so blue it hurt your eyes, and the visibility so fine you think you could see for 1,000 miles.
It's a good 2-hour buggy ride from ranch to ranch, but we'll cut that in half going cross country.
Ever see any hostiles out here?
You mean Indians on the warpath?
Yes.
Not in about a year. There are a few renegade Comanches left and some Apaches, but the Apaches usually stay well south of here. They still have some trouble along the border, but up here we've been lucky. So far. Would you kill an Indian?
Hell yes. Would and have. Color has nothing to do with staying alive.
Matt shielded his eyes against the glare of the sun.
Riders coming. About a half a dozen of them.
It's a cinch they aren't our hands or any of the boys from the Flying V.
Leah stood up in the stirrups and squinted her eyes against the sun.
They're Broken Lance riders. And they're on Circle S land.
Blackie, Val, and Childress. Those are hired guns with them.
Matt slipped the hammer thongs from his .44s.
Things are about to get real interesting.
My sister and me stood beside our parents since we were old enough to handle a rifle. I'll be damned if we'll back down from a bunch of scum working for John Lee.
About to get very interesting indeed.
Bam Ford was one of the hired guns. Neither Matt nor Sam knew the other gun slicks. All told, there were 6 Broken Lance riders, 3 punchers, and 3 gun hawks. And none of the 6 liked those Winchester rifles in the hands of the girls. Especially since they were pointed at their bellies, the hammers back.
We was just cutting across your range, missy.
This range is posted and has been for years, can't you read?
You got a smart mouth. You need to have your butt jerked out of that saddle and spanked.
Leah did not change expression and did not flinch when she pulled the trigger. Matt and Sam had cleared leather before the gunhawk left the saddle. Bam Ford had a very sorrowful expression on his face as he looked down the muzzles of 2 rifles and 2 six-shooters. He and the others had been caught flat-footed and knew it.
He spoke for himself, missy. I ain't never abused no woman in my life, nor talked ugly to one.
Fine, I'm glad to hear it. Now get that thug back in his saddle and get off the Circle S range.
John Lee will not like this one bit.
Listen, you pus-faced cocksucker. John Lee can take his worthless...
Leah proceeded to tell Blackie where John Lee could put his opinions, his gun hands, his ranch, and his horse. It would have been a very tight fit, unpleasant for the horse, and extremely uncomfortable for John.
Last pathetic wormy cattle all wrapped up in rusty fucking barbed wire.
Bam's mouth dropped open. Blackie's eyes widened in disbelief. The other punchers and gun hands sat in their saddles and stared in awe.
Missy, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. Whoa, we're gone.
And they got gone. The shoulder shot gun hand holding on to the saddle horn. Matt looked over at Leah.
You'll do.
It was one of the highest compliments that could be offered on the frontier. She smiled at him. Matt blushed. Lisa batted her eyes at Sam.
Oh, my word.
I figured you'd be over today, Leah. Lightning's all right. He's in the barn. Nettie put Cindy to bed. She come down with the vapors or something. Probably caught it from the night air. She's been vomiting in the mornings.
The girls exchanged glances. Matt and Sam just stood there looking stupid and wondering what was going on. It was obvious that Ed was still miffed about his daughter being called names by Leah. He did not invite them in, nor did Mrs. Carson make an appearance. Standing outside the barn, the girls told Noah what had happened on their range that morning.
So it started. Hell, it's time, I reckon. Leah, you know John will strike back. He's got to do it or lose face.
Well, you better warn your dad, then. He's not very happy with me, as it is.
All you did was call her what she is. She sure has been acting funny for the past month.
How long has she been throwing up in the mornings?
Several weeks. Every morning. Mama looks real worried about it, and Pa don't seem to know what's going on. Neither do I.
Sounds to me like she might be pregnant.
Noah jerked his hat off his head and threw it on the ground.
God damn it! That cocksucking son of a bitch! I should have known that fucker would... Oh, that's all we need. That'll really put the icing on the cake, light the candles and blow them out.
It's just a guess.
But probably a good one. Mama will take to bed, and Daddy will get a gun and go looking for Nick. Sure as the world, he'll do that.
That's crazy. It takes two, Noah. It can't be done alone, you know. Or maybe you don't.
Noah blushed a deep crimson, starting at his neck and traveling all the way to his forehead. He shuffled his boots in the dirt.
Oh, that's all right, Noah. It just means you're a good boy and you've stayed away from the shady ladies at the drive's end.
I reckon. I'll go fetch Lightning for you.
You girls had best talk to your mother about Cindy's, suspected condition. Maybe she can get through to your dad about how serious this thing is.
I shouldn't have shot that gunfighter this morning. I may have gotten us all killed. No man talks to me like that. Especially some low-down hired gun is out to destroy everything my family has worked for.
I think you did just fine.
It might just make John Lee step back and think about what he's doing. Or he might decide to attack the ranch tonight.
You're just a real bundle of joy, aren't you?
I wouldn't use that term around Cindy if I were you.
Jeff was shocked when Leah and Lisa told him what had happened on the range, and he was speechless for a few minutes after they told him, at their mother's urgings, that it was a good chance his best friend's daughter was pregnant by the son of the man who had vowed to destroy both ranches.
It'll kill that snot-nosed smart aleck.
Or get killed. Nick's fast, Dad. Real fast. And he likes to use those guns.
Who knows about this?
Oh, me, Lisa, Matt and Sam, Noah, Jean, you and Mom, and Dodge. But it'll get out, Papa, you know that. Tomorrow, next week, next month, she's going to start poking out any time.
Jeff grimaced at his daughter's language. None of the others dared tell him what she had suggested that John Lee do with ranch, opinions, gun hands, and horse.
I have a suggestion.
I'm sure open for one.
We can't bunch the cows close in. It'd probably take 15 acres of graze for one steer in this part of the country. Let Matt and me ride for hands, if you're willing to pay fighting wages.
Gun hands, Sam?
No, sir. Just punchers who are willing to ride and fight for top wages.
We need 10, but 8'll do. I know you're paying the hands that have left top wages, so there'll be no hard feelings there.
Where will you go?
East. Dodge says there's little settlements all along the stage road east of Pecos. If you decide to do it, we'll leave first thing in the morning. We'll have to have some cash up front so the punchers will know we mean business.
Jeff pushed up from his chair. He went into his study and came back with a small leather sack filled with greenbacks and gold coins. He tossed it to Matt.
Don't whitewash nothing, boys. Level with these men. Tell them there's a damn good chance they'll be buried right here on Circle S Range.
We'll leave before first light.
I'll have Conchita fix you a bait of food. We'll have breakfast ready for you at 4.
Have the boys stay on our range, Dodge. Ride in pairs and have plenty of 44s and 45s. Tell them to put an extra six-shooter in their saddlebags loaded up full. You and me, old hoss, we've seen range wars in our time. I don't think any of them have. Not like the bloody one that's about to erupt around these parts. I want every barrel filled with water and situated around the buildings in case John tries to burn us out. Get to it.
Matt and Sam left their own mounts stabled and chose two horses out of Jeff's herd. They were animals bred in and for this part of the country. They were gone long before first light. They crossed the Pecos and headed south by southeast, moving across country. By mid-afternoon, they swung down from the saddles at a small settlement many miles from the home range of John Lee. They walked into the saloon part of the big general store and ordered beer.
You boys look like you've been hard traveling.
Yeah, you're right. We're looking for punchers with a good sand bottom who aren't afraid of a fight if it comes to that. And we're paying top dollar.
Matt turned around. A cowboy who looked to be in his late 40s or early 50s was staring at him.
Name's Barlow. I drifted up this way from down on the Rio Grande. Ranched down there for 10 years. Fought Apaches, Comanches, and outlaws. Damn drought finally done me in where nothing else could. Who you boys ride for?
Circle S, up on the Pecos, northwest of here. Range war shaping up there.
Is that right? Tell me more.
Want a beer?
I'd drink one. Let's sit over yonder.
The conversation was short and blunt. Matt and Sam pulled no punches.
This John Lee shapes up like a rattler that needs stomping on. But then I ain't heard but one side of the story.
I'm not known for telling lies. My name's Bodine. Matt Bodine.
Heard of you. I ain't no fast gun.
We're not looking for fast guns, just punchers.
Barlow sat for a moment, then looked at Sam.
You got Injun blood in you?
I'm half Cheyenne. That make a difference to you?
Not unless you try to lift my hair some night. Then I might get hostile. If we leave now, we can make a little no-name town east of here by evening. I know an old boy over there named McGilly. He can ride anything with hair on it. He's good with a rope. There ain't no backup in him. And he's a fair hand with a gun.
You got a horse?
I damn sure didn't walk up here.
They made the settlement just at dusk and stabled the tired horses. The three of them arranged with the hostler to sleep in the loft and then went to the saloon for a drink before eating supper at the small cafe in the settlement.
Looking for a cowboy named McGilly.
He's around, trying to find work. I think he's chopping wood for his supper.
Matt placed a coin on the bar.
Got a swamper you can send to fetch him?
You bet.
Gilly was in his late 30s. His boots were patched and run down at the heels, and his clothes were old. But he carried himself proudly and wore his six-shooter like a man who knew how to use it. And more importantly, would use it.
Hard times befall you, Gilly?
You might say that. Man I was riding for lost it all, and I ain't found steady work since. You hiring your gun out, Barlow?
I ain't no gun slick, you know that. Man up north and west of here got range trouble. He's paying top dollar for men who won't back up. You interested?
Only if you feed me first. I ain't it since yesterday.
The four of them pulled out the next morning. They rode nearly 40 miles before finding a small, five-building town with a saloon. They had a beer and a cold roast beef sandwich while they were looking around the saloon.
I'm looking for punchers. I want men who don't look under the bunk every night for ghosts and who don't have to be nursemaided. Is there anybody like that here who wants to earn top dollar? Fighting wages?
Fellow was in here about 6 weeks ago, saying the same thing. I didn't like him at all. His name was Lee. John Lee, I think it was.
I ride for the brand John Lee is trying to put out of business. John Lee's hired him about 15 top guns and looking for more. If you sign on, it's for the duration. And you best notify your next of kin.
You talk mighty tough, mister. You got a name?
Matt Bodine. This is my blood brother, Sam Two Wolves. You got any more questions?
The man stood up, and his buddy rose with him.
My name's Compton, and this here's my pal, Tony. I'm with any man who stands up to that damn arrogant John Lee. Are we gonna stand around here all day or ride?
Six men rode out of the town, looking for about six more. Before leaving town, Matt had spent some of Jeff's money outfitting the new hands. Every loop was filled on their gun belts, the brass twinkling in the hot Texas sun. Their saddlebags were filled with supplies and clothing and other possibles. They cut south, heading for a settlement that Compton knew about, where a friend of his was working as a blacksmith's helper and hating every minute of it. As soon as the men reined up, the blacksmith knew he'd lost a helper.
You got a horse, Beavers?
Compton swung down from the saddle and shook hands with the young man with the easy grin.
Well, that's about all I got, Compton. I had to sell my saddle. What's going on?
Mind if he takes a break?
Wouldn't do no good if I did, would it? Take off, Beavers.
In the saloon, Beavers drank a beer and listened to what Matt had to say, then nodded his head.
Mistake me for a saddle, Mr. Baldine.
Matt tossed money on the table.
You're riding an hour.
Then there were seven. They continued south. Tony thought he knew of two men working on a ranch down near the beginning of the Middle Concho. If they were still there, they'd ride in a heartbeat.
I wouldn't appreciate anyone else coming here and taking my boys, but I heard tell of John Lee. Man swinging a mighty big looping, from what I hear. He needs his comeuppance. You boys get done up yonder. Come on back. Your jobs is waiting.
Taylor and Cloud joined the group. Cloud knew of a man named Denver who just got out of jail for whipping a man who had beat a plow horse to death. His buddy just didn't like to see an animal mistreated, and he beat the crap out of the farmer.
I like him already.
They found Denver after 2 days of searching. He was camped by a little creek, looking sadly at the holes in his last pair of socks.
If you ain't the most pitiful sight I ever seen, I ought to just shoot you and put you out of your misery.
Well, feed me first, and my belt buckle is rubbing against my backbone.
Sam gave him a fresh pair of socks, and Denver settled up. The group began angling west and slightly north. At a campsite near a small copse of trees, Matt reined up. Chucky and Parnell, two men who had worked for his dad a few years back up in Wyoming, looked up and grinned at him.
Matt Bodine, light and sit. We would offer you some coffee, but we ain't got Harry.
We got plenty of coffee and food, Chucky. Let's make camp here, boys. We've found the hands we need.
Over hot food and hotter and stronger coffee, Matt laid it out for the two men.
We seen Tanner and Peck the other week. They was making their brags about going to work for some big-shot rancher named Lee, drawing top wages.
They said they was meeting up with Roberts, Winlow, and Dusty Jordan. That's a whole slop jar full of top guns. You boys in with us?
Just try to keep us away.
The men headed back for Circle S Range. Matt had noticed that the remuda of the Circle S was not up to snuff, so he stopped along the way and bought a dozen horses from two different ranchers. The horses he bought would not win any beauty contests. They were tough, trained to work cattle. Exactly 1 week after the brothers had pulled out, they rode into the ranch yard of the Circle S. Someone had spotted the dust long before the riders reached the ranch, and everyone was out, waiting for them. They were a rough-looking bunch, and that included Matt and Sam. Their clothing was caked with dust and stiff from days of sweat. They had not shaved in a week.
Barlow, ain't seen you in a spell.
About 10 years, Dodge. You ramrod in this outfit?
That I am.
Good working with you again.
The same. Matt and Sam laid on the line for you boys? Fine. This here's the boss and his lady, Jeff Sparks and his missus. These are his youngins. This fine-looking boy here is Gene Sparks, and them two gals yonder is Leah and Lisa Sparks. The cook is Conchita. Don't make her mad, or we'll all be gnawing on armadillo. Which ain't that bad, by the way. Boss?
I'm grateful to you, men, more than I can say. With you here, we all stand a fighting chance of pulling this thing off, and I won't forget you. Now, you boys go clean up, and tonight we'll have us a little yard party and roast a beef. Tomorrow, the work begins.
The bunkhouse had been built to house 25 or more men. That many usually were needed at roundup and branding, so it was no problem getting settled in. Many of the new hands were either familiar with the names of the regulars or knew them outright, so an easy camaraderie was quickly developed. Matt and Sam and those who just rode in took turns in the wooden tubs out back of the bunkhouse, with fresh water being added often. After Matt bathed and shaved and put on clean clothes, he walked up to the main house where Leah showed him to the study.
I don't guess the news of Cindy's condition has reached her father yet. At least there hasn't been any killings that I'm aware of.
How'd the dance go?
Jeff looked confused.
The dance that Cindy talked about over supper.
Oh, I don't know. Hadn't heard any more about it. I hope you called it off.
Might be kind of fun going.
Pull in your horns, boy. There'll be plenty of action for everybody soon enough. How much of my money did you spend?
Matt tossed the leather sack on the desk.
Maybe a third of it. I outfitted some of the boys and advanced them some coins to rattle in their pockets. I've got it written down in my tally book. We're going to need a lot of supplies for this crew, and if it's all right with you, why not take several wagons into the settlement and get it all done at one shack before John Lee hears about the new hands?
Good idea. I'll send Red over to Carson's place and ask if he wants to send a wagon with us. Gene and Noah can drive two of the wagons. Will you and Sam go with them?
Sure. What's been the reaction from John Lee over the gun hand that Leah shot?
None so far, but from what the boys hear, the gun slick is out of action for a long time. That .44 slug did some terrible damage.
When do you want us to leave for the settlement?
I'll send Red over to the Flying V first thing in the morning. Probably pull out the next day, but for tonight, let's relax and have a good time.
But cowboys being what they are, the new hands did not lounge around that afternoon. They roped fresh mounts from the corral and rode out onto Circle S Range, getting some feel for the land. The holdings of Jeff were so vast, it would take them days to ride over all of the range. But they checked out what they could that afternoon and were back in time to knock the dust from their clothes and enjoy the party. With so many hands to feed, Mrs. Sparks and Leah and Lisa pitched in to help Conchita, while Jeff manned the steer over the cook pit, turning it often on the spit to ensure even cooking. The party went off without a hitch, with everybody having a good time and everybody eating too much. Breakfast was served and over with before dawn. Dodge stepped into the bunkhouse carrying a sack. He placed the sack on a scarred and uneven old table.
No riding alone. Everybody works in pairs. Make sure your rifle is loaded up full, as well as your shotguns. Sack's full of boxes of .44s and .45s. Everybody put a box in your saddlebags. Red, you and Jimmy ride over to the Flying V this morning and see if Carson wants to send a wagon to the settlement to fetch supplies. Take off. Rest of you, listen up.
The gist of it was a roundup. While Matt and Sam had been gone, Jeff had received a reply to a letter he'd sent some weeks before. It was from an Army procurement agent agreeing to buy cattle from both Sparks and Carson. The Army was sending in drovers to take the cattle to Railhead. If they were heading west, it would be Dodge City. If the cattle were due to head east, they would be driven to Fort Worth. All knew that the drovers would be left alone by John Lee and his hired thugs. He swung a big loop, but he also had sense enough to leave the Army alone. But the move would be sure to anger the man, for he would know that now Jeff and Ed would have plenty of cash money to operate.
Just as soon as the Army's drovers have left, John Lee will strike.
That's my thinking, too. He'll either do a first strike, an all-out attack against the ranch, or he'll start picking us off one at a time.
He'll hit Ed Carson first, the smaller number of men to fight.
Not if his son knows his girlfriend is with child. Not unless he's crazy. He won't want her harmed. Or perhaps he would, to hide his guilt. Think about that.
It would take a low-down man to do something like that.
Let's talk it over with Jeff.
They found Sparks out supervising the roundup and told him of their suspicions.
You boys sure like to bring me problems. But you're right. Nick is crazy enough to do something like you suggest. He don't love the girl. Never has. He said it often enough when drinking. But look here. If I tell her father what we all suspect, he'll go crazy. Killing crazy. You boys don't know him the way I do.
It's your decision, Jeff. I suppose this puts you in one of those damned if you do and damned if you don't positions.
I'll think on it. Red's back. Ed will send Noah with a wagon for supplies. You boys be ready to pull out early in the morning and be prepared for trouble in crossing.
The Circle S was sending three wagons, the Flying V two wagons. Gene, Red, and Matt would each drive a wagon with Sam on horseback scouting, and Noah and Sonny would drive the Flying V wagons. They expected to be gone the better part of 2 days. A day down, and then load up and catch some sleep, then a day back with the heavily loaded wagons. The trip down was boring, but as soon as they pulled into the settlement, all new boredom was over. Half a dozen broken lance horses were tied up at the hitch rail in front of the saloon, and several more horses wearing the brand were tied across the street.
We're not here to start trouble, but if it comes, be ready for it. And it will probably come.
I'd like a beer to cut the dust.
Sounds good to me. After we get the supplies loaded.
I had a hunch you'd say that.
I don't want no trouble in my store, mister.
The shopkeeper was speaking to Matt, but his eyes were on Noah and Jean. Matt laid several sheets of paper on the counter.
There won't be any problems. Just fill that order.
He had noticed two men lounging at the rear of the store, and they weren't there to play checkers and gossip. Their tied down guns and smirky faces gave them away.
That's the problem, mister. I can't fill that order.
Why not?
Matt looked around. The shelves were filled with everything imaginable. Bolts of cloth to boots, canned goods to corsets, ammunition to hernia aids.
You seem to have everything we need.
Matt casually pulled an axe handle out of a half barrel as if inspecting it. One of the gunslingers walked up to him.
Hey you! Are you deaf? Carry your damn business elsewhere.
Why should I?
The gunny grinned at him. He had bad teeth. Matt had a hunch he was going to make them worse in a few seconds. Or make them better, depending on one's point of view.
Because I said so, cowboy. Now rattle your hocks out of here before I take them guns of yourn and feed them to you.
His buddy moved in closer. Matt hit him with the axe handle, right in the teeth. His buddy was jerking iron when Matt drove one end of the axe handle into his belly. He doubled over, and Matt conked him on the noggin with the business end of the wood.
Load up the supplies, boys.
Sam and the others came in through the back door to see what the holdup was.
I can't leave you alone for a moment without you getting into mischief.
Take the guns, Red. We can always use spare six-shooters.
Oh, lordy. Man, don't you know who them two is? That's Terry Perkins and Jay Hunt. They work for Mr. Lee. Them's real bad men, mister. I bet they killed 100 men between them.
I'm impressed. You best be keeping a tally of what we're taking instead of running your mouth.
That snapped the man out of it. He began frantically writing down what the boys grabbed up. Matt cut himself a wedge of cheese and got a handful of crackers. He kept the axe handle close by and his eyes on the front door. It paid off. Just as he was finishing his snack, a man stepped out of the saloon and began walking across the street. Matt gestured to Noah and Jean.
Drag these two out back. Where's all your customers?
These gun hands run them off. Told them not to come back.
When the gun hawks get into town?
This morning. They knew you boys was coming. I heard them talking about it.
That obscenity of a girl. She tipped off Nick knowing it might get her brother hurt or killed.
Yeah, she's a real sweetheart. This one of them coming across the street?
Yes. I don't know his name. He threatened me.
Did he now?
Matt leaned against the counter and waited, his guns loose and leather. The gun hand stepped into the store.
What the hell? Where's Terry and Jay?
They were tired. I suggested they take a nap. They thought it was a good idea.
Who the hell are you?
Matt Bodine.
The gunny drew. The saloon emptied of men, all running for the general store and all with guns in their hands. Matt pulled his other .44, stepped to the door, and emptied both .44s into the knot of gunslicks. Not a man was left standing, and several weren't moving.
Are you really Matt Bodine? The Wyoming gunfighter?
I'm Matt Bodine.
Gene ran inside and looked out at the bloody, body-lined street.
Holy crap!
That's my brother. Subtle is his middle name.
Sure cut the odds down some.
Oh, God! Give me a doctor!
We ain't got none. Sorry, mister. Got a barber with some leeches, though.
Oh, to hell with you!
Leeches? Nobody bleeds people anymore.
Well, he does.
Get the stuff loaded up.
Matt stepped out into the street. He counted 3 dead and 4 wounded. Sam walked across the street to his brother's side.
An ugly day, brother.
Yes. Miss is sure to blow the lid off. But damned if I was going to let them reach the store.
I would have done the same.
A portly man shoved his way through the crowd. He was a part-time undertaker, part-time preacher, part-time water finder, and part-time rainmaker. He was a fair undertaker, a pretty good preacher, a better-than-average diviner, and a lousy rainmaker. Little boys and girls peeked around their mother's skirts, staring at Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves. No one noticed the lone rider walking his horse slowly from the east side of the settlement.
What the hell are we supposed to do with all these wounded men?
Patch him up or let the hogs have him. I really don't care.
Pretty tough way of looking at it, son.
They both turned. The small man, not more than 5 feet 6 or 7 and slender built, stood alone, but the guns belted around his waist made him larger than life, and the badge pinned to his vest said it all. Texas Ranger.
They opened this dance.
Is that right? I heard a shooting a mile out of town. Thought I'd see what was happening. Who are you?
Matt Bodine.
Oh. Heard of you. Wyoming gun hand.
I'm a Wyoming rancher who happens to be blessed or cursed with the ability to use a short gun.
Blessed or cursed? Interesting way of putting it. I have to remember that. I'm Josiah Finch, Texas Rangers. I'm tracking two murderers, been after them for 3 weeks. I ain't particularly interested in your doings, but it's a rare thing to see one man standing and six or seven on the ground, some of them getting stiff.
I'll tell you what happened, Ranger.
I don't want to know what happened. You tell me, and then I'll have to spend hours writing out a damn report. Besides, I ain't seen no complaints in anybody's hand.
No complaints on this side of the issue.
I reckon you be Sam Two Wolves.
That is correct.
Heard of you, too. Your daddy was a Cheyenne chief named Medicine Horse, educated fine back east.
That's right.
Get the wagons ready to roll, Red.
You bet.
And you come into town, leave three or four dead laying around, and then just leave like you would a church picnic when the fried chicken run out? I find that interesting.
What do you want me to do? Squat down here in the street and hold their hands?
I've known a bunch of hard men, son. Sam Bass, Harden, Baker, Allison, to mention a few. You're a hard man, Matt Bodine. I think we better talk.
Is that in order?
Could be, if you push me to it.
You a drinking man, Ranger?
I've been known to tipple a few now and then.
Let's find us a quiet table and a cool beer.
That's the best offer anyone's made me in some time.
The wagons were moved to a shady location just outside of town while Matt and Sam talked with the ranger.
Yeah, John Lee's name has been mentioned around headquarters more than once. Governor's getting tired of people saying there ain't no law west of the Pecos. I'm fixing to change all that.
By yourself?
Yep. Soon as I track down these murderers.
Finch, John Lee probably has 50 gun hands on his payroll.
The men looked out the window as Terry Perkins and Jay Hunt rode slowly out of town. Perkins had a bloody rag tied around his mouth, and Jay Hunt's hat was sitting his head cockeyed from the big knot put there by an axe handle.
I guess you done that, too.
Me and an axe handle. As I was saying, Lee has a lot of men on his payroll. Some of them snake mean. How do you propose to bring law and order when you're looking down the barrels of that many guns?
You don't shoot a Texas Ranger, son. Makes other Rangers irritable. I know a Ranger tracked a man for 5 years. Finally found him in a fancy eating place in New York City. Whooped him right there in front of God, the mayor, and everybody else. Throwed him on a train and brung him back to Texas. We allowed him a fair trial, and then they hanged him. Bad business shooting a Texas Ranger.
Matt then realized all the wild tales he'd heard about the Texas Rangers over the years were more than likely true, or at least had a vein of truth running through them. Matt had a hunch this small, quiet ranger would track a man through the gates of hell, and if braced, would kill you in a heartbeat.
Jeff Sparks and Ed Carson are good, decent men, Finch. If they weren't, neither Sam nor me would have thrown in with them.
I don't doubt that at all.
As you saw today, if lead is to fly, then so be it.
I sure enough seen that. But you hear this. If the governor has to send in the militia, he's going to be one irritated man. It's bad enough we all had them goddamn Yankee carpetbaggers and Reconstructionists in here. Now things are getting back to normal and we're beginning to run our own lives. The last thing he needs is a range war.
Like it or not, he's got one.
I'll be along in about a week. I find out where these murderers is hiding and I'll head there. I hope to take them alive, but I ain't counting on it. I figure they'll go down smoking. If that's the case, I won't have to tote them back and that'll save me some time.
Sam looked at the man closely to see if he was kidding. He was not. If Finch even had a sense of humor, he kept it well hidden.
You married, Finch?
Was. Outlaws killed her back in 66. I just come home from the war. We was trying to pick up the pieces of our lives. We was just kids when we got married. Took me 4 years to track those no-goods down, but I done it. Found the last one in a canyon in Idaho. Shot him in the belly and left him there. I hope it took him a long time to die. I don't like outlaws. at all.
Finch pushed his chair back and stood up.
Have you heard that some experts are saying that home environment has a great deal to do with the making of a criminal?
Tuh, hell's fire. That's the silliest damn thing I ever heard of. I didn't even have shoes when I was growing up, and I never stole nothing, nor done a harmful thing to no innocent person in my life.
Josiah Finch walked out of the saloon. The way he walked told anybody with a lick of sense that this was a man to be given a wide berth. Josiah might be small in stature, but he was one hell of a big man.
That, brother, is one man I would not want on my trail.
Nor I. You ready to head out?
Yeah. We'll camp alongside the road, well off the road. John Lee is liable to go on the warpath after today.
If we're lucky, he'll wait until Josiah Finch returns. I have a hunch Finch would willingly take on the entire bunch of them and come out on top.
Jeff and Gene met the wagons as they came to a stop in front of the ranch house.
I already heard what happened. John Lee sent a rider over early this morning. His message was short and sweet. He's ordered any Circle S or Flying V rider shot on sight if they come into crossing.
Matt climbed down from the wagon seat.
If I'd have backed down, we wouldn't have any supplies. John Lee's boys were waiting and had already told the shopkeeper not to sell to the Circle S or the Flying V.
I understand. I'm not blaming you. It had to come at some point. We'll just stay out of crossing. I told the messenger that any broken lance riders found on my range will be shot on sight.
Do you mean it?
Yes, I do. Ever seen a range war, son?
Not really.
They're mean and ugly, and a lot of blood will be spilled on each side. The blood of men and women. I've ordered the girls to stay within sight of the house when they ride. You've seen how this land can fool you. You think you're alone on the range, and the next instant 50 riders come out over a swell not 300 yards away from you.
Will they pay any attention to you?
Yeah, they know how serious this is. Now tell me this. How did the broken lance gunslicks know we were going to the settlement for supplies?
Imagine Cindy tipped off Nick.
Ed just left here. He thinks the same thing. He got the same message I got this morning.
His reaction?
Open the chute and let her bump. I spec right now Cindy's rear end is on fire. He was talking strong about taking a razor strop to her butt.
That would be a sight to see. If anyone deserves it, she does.
I hate you! You can't whoop me like a damn plow horse!
Mrs. Carson had left the room in tears.
Don't you even care that because of you, your brother might have been killed?
Nick will kill you for slapping me around!
The father stood dumbfounded, staring at his girl.
Is that what you want, Cindy? Me dead?
Yes! I despise you! I love Nick. I'm carrying his baby.
I know that. I've known it for several weeks. You pack your bags, girl. Take the buggy. Leave it in town. I'll pick it up someday. I want you out of this house in 1 hour. I'll give you money to get you a room at Fanny's boarding house. The baby I could live with and love if that was all there was to it. It would be my grandbaby. Your treachery's something I can't and I won't abide. I'll arrange to have money sent to you from time to time.
I don't need your goddamn money. Nick will take care of me.
You poor little fool. That punk doesn't care about you. He used you like a whore. He told everybody in the damn county about it. Now listen to me. I'll see that you get proper care and arrange for you to go on to an unwed mother's home. I think there's one in Fort Worth.
You ignorant shit! I don't want your goddamn money, and I don't want to go to some home when Nick will take me in. And when he find out what you did to me, you bastard!
Hitch up the buggy for your sister, Noah. She'll be leaving us.
For how long, Papa?
Forever.
At the Circle S, Red stood in the doorway, hat in hand.
Boss, I was over by the road about an hour ago. Cindy Carson come along driving a buggy, eyes all red from crying. Buggy was loaded down with trunks and valises.
Which direction was she heading?
Toward crossing.
Oh, she's either run away from home or Red's tossed her out. Thank you, Red.
The puncher nodded and walked back to the bunkhouse to clean up for supper. Jeff turned to his family.
I'd like to comfort my old friend, but I don't know what to do or what to say.
If Cindy thinks Nick is going to welcome her, she's sure in for a rude surprise.
I think we're all in for a whole bunch of surprises, girl. None of them are going to be much fun.
The drovers hired by the army showed up early the next morning, and that day was a busy one, with no one allowed much time to ponder the fate of Cindy. Jeff put the money from the sale of his cattle into his big safe and breathed a little easier. Now he had some working capital, hands to help fight John Lee, whenever the man made his move, and 1,000 less head of cattle to worry about. There was nothing he could do now except wait, worry, and wonder. John Lee sat behind his desk and smiled at the news. His son sat before him, looking very unhappy.
I guess you're gonna tell me Mariner's the honorable thing to do.
Honor has nothing to do with it. But you are going to marry her.
The fuck I will!
Use your head for a change. Think. If something were to happen to the Carson family, you would own the Flying V.
Nick lifted his head, and the eyes of father and son met. Hard eyes. Cruel eyes.
It's a good thing to have a wife and children. Makes a man respectable. After a time, you can keep your woman in town for variety. Just as long as it's a discreet affair. I'll ride in and talk to Cindy. It wouldn't be proper to have her staying out here before the wedding. But the wedding will take place here, of course. We'll invite all the townspeople. They'll come, don't worry. Is Cindy showing yet?
Huh?
Is her condition noticeable?
Oh, nah.
Good. I'll have the dressmaker do it up right then. Oh, it'll be a grand affair, son. A grand affair.
If you say so.
I'll be a grandfather. My, my. If it's a boy, he'll be named after me, of course. If it's a girl, we'll name her after your mother. No finer woman ever lived than your mother. Go get my horse saddled, son. Tell the boys we're riding into town. I love parties, and I'll make sure this party is one that the townspeople will never forget.
I had not believed it. John's pulled in the horns of his gunfighters, and his son is getting married. Incredible.
Matt and Sam were sitting in the big den of the ranch house with the Sparks family, having coffee. The foreman sat on the lower outer hearth of the coal fireplace.
Or perhaps it's not so incredible.
How do you mean?
Should something happen to the Carson family, the Flying V is John's, without his having to fire a shot.
Bastard. Of course you're right. I never thought of that.
You don't really think John would stoop that low, do you?
Oh, Mother.
Leah's right, Nance. John Lee would do anything to gain total control of this area. What are you grinning about, Matt?
So you heard that everybody in the town of Crossing is invited to the wedding, right, Jeff?
That's right.
And they'll go?
Everybody but Al. He's the bartender at the saloon, and he hates John Lee, always has. I think John keeps him on for his amusement.
The townspeople. They'll go because they're afraid of John or because they like him.
Mostly because they're all just like him. Petty, mean, small-minded people. Used to be a lot of good folks made up that town, no more. They all left. Scattered around from the settlement to Fort Worth. Well, what are you getting at?
So the town will be deserted, right?
Just about. Might be a traveling salesman staying at the hotel, but I expect the town will just shut down.
That's interesting. Very interesting.
Sam looked at his brother. The very devil seemed to be popping out of Matt's eyes.
Oh, Lord, Matt, am I reading you right?
Matt just grinned. Ed Carson sat down on his front steps. It was the first time he'd laughed since he'd banished his daughter from his house and life. Noah sat beside him, tears running from his eyes. Mrs. Carson leaned in the front doorway, shaking with laughter. Sparks, Dodge, Matt, and Sam stood by, big grins on their faces. Ed wiped his eyes.
You know, it might work. My God, we might be able to pull it off.
It'll be worth the effort just to see the expression on John's face.
Got the boys scouring the area for wagons. Folks left behind a lot of wagons when they pulled out or were killed. The boys are patching them up. Wedding's next week. We got lots of time to plan this out.
I love it.
We'll use those big Missouri mules the farmer sold me. I never seen nothing that could pull like those mules.
To make it even better, John Lee has declared the whole week before the wedding peaceful. No trouble as long as we stay out of Crossing. And we'll damn sure stay out of Crossing between now and the wedding day.
One of Ed's hands rode in and sat his saddle in amazement, looking at the men and women quivering with laughter.
What the hell's going on here?
We're gonna go steal something!
Steal something? Steal what?
Noah told him. His mouth dropped open. He sat his saddle, speechless for a moment.
You can't do that! Nobody ever stole a whole damn town!
While John Lee was caught up in planning for the wedding and the party afterward, the men and women of the Circle S and the Flying V were making plans of their own, and doing so with all the cunning of generals planning a major offensive.
Wagons?
12.
Mules?
8, and enough horses to take up the slack.
They had sent Parnell into town, since no one knew he worked for the Circle S. That plus the fact he lost the draw when they drew cards.
They're shutting her down for the day and the night. The only person who ain't going to the shindig is Al the bartender.
We'll have a place for Al when the new town is built. And won't John be happy about that?
I hate to poke holes in all this happy planning, but tell me this. What is to prevent John Lee from building another town?
Nothing, but he'll have to have the lumber brought in by wagon. From the time he sends in the order to the time the material actually arrives will be weeks, maybe months. This range war will be over one way or the other long before then.
But this victory will be ours, and pulled off without firing a shot. That's what makes it so nice.
There'll be plenty of shots fired after those penny-pinching weasels in town come back from the wedding and find the whole damn town gone.
I just hope that when this is reported, if it is reported, that the Rangers don't send in Josiah Finch to investigate it.
There ain't no law out here, Sam. The nearest law is 100 miles away. Report it? I don't think so. John doesn't want Rangers in here. But he'll be plenty mad about it. Killing mad. Ooh, it's a fine plan, and in the long run, if we win, it'll benefit us. But once it's done, the lead is gonna start flying.
So let's have some fun before the real shooting starts.
Matt grinned, and it was an infectious grin. The closer the date drew, the more frenzied the work around the Circle S and the Flying V became. The cowboys were all caught up in it, for once not griping about work they had to do out of a saddle. The wagons and harnesses were checked out, spokes and rims and reins and buckles and collars and hobbles were repaired or replaced. And always somebody was chuckling at just the thought of what they were going to attempt to pull off, and it was no certainty they could do it. They were going to have about 12 hours to take down the town and transport it and all the goods within the buildings. Cindy's name was not mentioned in the Carson house. As far as Ed was concerned, his daughter no longer existed. Her being with child out of wedlock had nothing to do with it. That she would consort with the enemy was the straw that overloaded the camel. Whatever she had left behind at the house was removed and burned at Ed's orders. Her name was removed from the family Bible. In Ed's mind, Cindy Carson was dead. On the night before the wedding, the lamps went out early in the ranches of Sparks and Carson, and everyone went to sleep with a smile on their lips. Cowboys occasionally chuckled in their sleep. Long before dawn tinted the horizon, the wagons were rolling slowly toward crossing. The drivers wanted to be in as close as they dared when the exodus of the townspeople began. At 9 o'clock, the air hot and still, the first buggies and men on horseback began leaving the town. Matt lay on the crest of a low hill, on his belly in the short grass, watching the town through field glasses.
Get him ready, Tate. It won't be long now.
At 9:30, Matt watched as Al the bartender walked through the silent town. He made his loop, returned to the end of the street, and waved a white handkerchief.
Let's go!
We'll take no one's personal possessions, but I helped build this damn town, put up some of the money to buy the lumber. So I figure at least a part of it belongs to me. Take it down!
It wasn't as difficult as it might have seemed. With a few braces knocked out, several ropes in the right places, and cowboys on horseback with the rope around the saddle horn, a wall came down. As soon as that was done, teams began dismantling the wall and stacking the lumber in wagons.
How about the boardwalk?
Take it!
The first wagons left the town within minutes. The wagons filled with merchandise from stores. The town was being moved 8 miles south onto Circle S property. With people working frantically, the job did not take nearly as long as some had imagined. they left behind them a very strange sight. Beds and feather ticks and chamber pots, cook stoves and wash tubs and dressing tables, dressing screens and parlor lamps and corset chairs, spittoons and foot warmers and mop buckets, all sitting forlornly on the rolling prairie. The men left the outhouses intact, and that only added to the bizarreness of the sight. Sometimes, when the sides of structures were jerked out, the roof fell in and landed intact. If the building had been small enough, mules were used to simply pull the roof away from the town's rapidly vanishing site to be dismantled later. By mid-afternoon, the town of Crossing no longer existed. 8 miles south of the site, hammering and banging and sawing had been going on for hours. All hoped that no stiff wind would suddenly spring up, for the new town, for a while at least, was going to be flimsily built. Stalker's General Store and Emporium was changed to Leah's Family Store. Crossing's stable and livery was changed to Dodge's Barn. Harris's Saddle Shop was now Jean's Leather Goods. Crossing Hotel and Saloon was changed to the Pecos Rooms and Bar. The cafe was now the Eats. The barbershop was now the Hair Palace. That was Lisa's idea. Matt Bodine was now the new town marshal, elected to the office in the same election that made Jeff Sparks the new mayor.
What are we going to call it?
Name it.
Okay. Well, that's good enough.
What's good enough?
A new name.
What new name?
Name it.
You want the town to be called Name It?
Why not?
Sounds good to me.
I'd like to call it Prairie Flower. Or something like that.
I won't be the mayor of no damn town called Prairie Flower.
Why don't we just stay with Name It?
Sam walked off.
Prairie Flower?
Nick and Cindy were united in holy matrimony. More or less, since there was no preacher and John Lee married them after reading a few words from the good book. The party got underway. About 7 o'clock, he sent riders into town to bring back more whiskey. They returned in a cloud of dust and confusion.
There ain't no town.
John looked up at the man still sitting his saddle.
I beg your pardon?
There ain't no town.
Are you drunk?
Hell no, I ain't drunk. I'm telling you what I seen with my own eyes. Or what I didn't see, I reckon, would be the way to put it. There ain't no damn town left.
Towns don't disappear. You must have got lost.
I ain't lost. Even the dogs is gone.